Verse 8, and here it requires some explanation. They went out, they fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Is this the end? And if so, why in the world would Mark end here?
Yes. Well, I think it is the end, and we want to talk about that. But before we do, and I'm going to talk about this in some detail, but let's first talk about that last line, for they were afraid. But again, in Mark's gospel, and we see this in chapter 4 with the stilling of the storm, where it says they feared a big fear, and they said, who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? So fear is generally an indication of divine activity, and this is not simply an observation that the women lacked faith or something like that. This is also an observation that you might say they're aware, how should I put this, Todd? They're aware of the awesomeness of what's going on here, and it's sort of fear before divine activity, if I may put it that way. So the ending is not as dark, let's say, as people would like to paint it, that by the end, the women are afraid, and that's, you know, kind of the end, and therefore that's a bad ending. Because as a matter of fact, fear is always an indicator of the presence of God in the Gospel of Mark. Okay, now let's talk specifically about the ending. The Gospel of Mark has four different endings, not two different endings. It has four different endings. Some manuscripts end it with verse 8. What most people are familiar with is ending it after verse 8, adding on verses 9 to 20. But there are two other possibilities. One manuscript has a short little ending that's tacked on to 16:8, and that ending reads as follows. All the things that were commanded, they, the women, announced briefly to those around Peter. And after these things, also Jesus himself, from the rising of the sun until the setting, from east to west, sent out through them the sacred and imperishable gospel of eternal salvation. Now, that's basically one kind of long verse. One manuscript ends the gospel with that after verse 8. And then the fourth possibility for an ending is to take that little short ending that I had, that I just translated, and tack on after that verses 9 to 20. And a number of manuscripts have that. So just to summarize again, you can end it at verse 8. You can end it at verse 8 plus the little one-verse addendum. You can end it at verse 8 plus the one-verse addendum plus verses 9 to 20, or 1 to 8 and 9 to 20. Four different possibilities. Now, here's what most people don't realize, and that is, I think I have to research this further, Todd, but I think I'm right in my next statement, that I believe that this is the only place in the New Testament where the manuscripts themselves, I mean the actual ancient manuscripts, actually discuss the variant readings. That is to say that in some of these ancient manuscripts, there are comments inserted by the scribes that describe the problem of the ending of Mark. Now, I'll read two of those to you. Here is what one group of manuscripts called Family One says, and this is a comment that's added after 16:8, for they were afraid. It says, In some of the copies, up to right here, the evangelist brings it to its fulfillment, until the place where Eusebius, the follower of Pamphilus, either, the verb is canonized, and it's either that he declared that that's where it should be, or he wrote these things called the Eusebian canons, which were a kind of a way to keep track of the passages. But whatever it is, Eusebius declared that it was up to 16:8. Then it goes on to say, in many of the copies, also these things are written, and then they add verses 9 to 20. So just to summarize that for your listeners, the comment in this group of manuscripts says, look, in some of the copies, the thing ends here at 16:8. That's where Eusebius kind of said it should end. But in others of the copies, there are some more verses, verses 9 to 20, and then they add those on. Now, there's another set of manuscripts, including a manuscript called L, which is a very good one, that says, also these things are presented after the words ephabuntagar, which is for they were afraid. And now they add on the verses 9 to 20, but they add them on after that little short ending. So they make a comment, hey, you know, there are other things to add on here, and we're going to add them on, but they add them on after that little short ending. Now, so this is the, for the listeners, this is the first important point, that as far as the ending is concerned, there's actually controversy in the manuscripts themselves as to where the gospel might end. All right, here's the second major point. This Eusebius that they're talking about, who is a very important theologian, lived around 325, around the Council of Nicaea, and was very important for the text of the New Testament and for the canon, the books that are included in the New Testament. Now, he actually, Eusebius, actually comments specifically on this problem. I mean, this is actually kind of amazing. And this is what Eusebius says when he's writing in a letter to a friend of his named Marinus. And they're discussing Mark's resurrection account and Matthew's resurrection account. Of course, just like you're doing right now, they raise the issue about where does Mark's resurrection account end. Here's what Eusebius says. So again, he's writing in the early 4th century AD. He says, at any rate, the accurate ones of the copies define the end of the history according to Mark with the words of the young man who appeared to the women and said to them, don't be afraid, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Well, see, that's 16:8. Now, he says that's what the accurate ones have. He goes on to say, for in this way, just about in all the copies of the gospel according to Mark, the end is defined. So now here's Eusebius writing in the early 4th century who says that the just about all the copies he knows of the gospel of Mark end at 16:8, at in any rate what he calls the accurate ones. Which leads me to my next point, my third point. The fact is that we have no manuscripts before the time of Eusebius, that is to say, before the early 4th century, we have no manuscripts that have the longer endings that that are evidenced, like, say, in the King James Bible. So all of the manuscripts that we have that longer ending come from a later time. Now, that doesn't mean it couldn't have existed earlier, but it it just is a pretty interesting fact there. So you might say historically, the evidence is actually on the side of ending the story at 16:8 with the women being afraid. Now, of course, this this has certainly caused issues because people have said there's a book that came out somewhat recently by a man named Clayton Croy, and it's called The Mutilation of Mark's Gospel. The Mutilation of Mark's Gospel. And this guy, Professor Croy, contends that both the beginning and the end of Mark's Gospel have been lost. So he thinks there should be an infancy narrative at the beginning, and he believes that at the end of the Gospel, there should be more on the end. Now, he doesn't personally believe that the verses 9 to 20 that we have are that longer ending, but he thinks that there used to be something else, and it got ripped off the copy in some way. That the Gospel of Mark was mutilated. That's what his contention is. Now, he has argued strongly that it can't end at 16:8. Now, I don't believe his arguments, but let me give you some of them. He says it would be odd to end a book with the conjunction gar, for they were afraid. Your listeners should know that when we say for they were afraid, the word for comes at the front of the sentence, but in Greek it comes at the end of the sentence, and that's a little bit unusual. He says further that nobody would end a story like this, that this is, what would you say, I'm quoting from him. He says, if Mark ends his gospel at 16:8, he defies the general expectations of ancient storytelling. And a lot of people have said that they think that that's a very strong argument, that to end it at 16:8 with this sort of open-ended ending makes it sound like you're doing some late 20th century film noir or something like that, you know, and that nobody in the ancient world would have done something like that. Now, in fact, neither of these reasons is true. He's got other reasons as well, but these, I think, are the best ones. Neither of those reasons is true. There are books that end exactly in that open-ended way grammatically, and we've actually got examples in the Bible. I don't know if you or your listeners actually think about this, but we've got examples in the Bible of open-ended endings like this that are just as stark, and the chief one is the book of Jonah. How does the book of Jonah end, Todd?
Well, it ends with the repentance of Nineveh, up to and including the livestock, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. But, I mean, what is actually said, though, in the book of Jonah at the very end, and I'm talking about kind of God's interaction with... So, remember the plant comes up and Jonah's kind of mad when it withers and so on like that, and then God comes to him, and he says, Jonah says, it's better for me to die. I'm in chapter 4, verse 8. God said to Jonah, do you do well to be angry for the plant? Yes, I do well to be angry enough to die, said Jonah. And the Lord said, you pity the plant. Should I not pity Nineveh, that great city, in which there are more than 120,000 persons? Dot, 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 dot. Well, what's Jonah's response to that? See, you have... That story ends kind of in mid-conversation. And it's actually not much different, really, than even the ending of the book of Matthew, where Jesus sees people on the mountain in Galilee, gives them the Great Commission. I'm just being silent here because I just want to make the point. And what happens then? You know, so now I'm just giving you biblical examples. There are actually examples, and in a show like this, it's not really going to be helpful to go through these, but there are examples from ancient literature, from Euripides' play Iphigenia and Aulis, and also from the Aeneid of Virgil, both of those very, very famous plays in the ancient world that end exactly like this, with a kind of a strange openness. In fact, in Virgil's Aeneid, it winds up with Aeneas killing a guy in this very brutal fashion, and that's the end of the story. So I think this is an important point. I'm spending a little time on this for a good reason. People will say if Mark ended his story like that, it would have been unprecedented. In fact, it is not unprecedented. And for people who have done plenty of studies literarily in the ancient world, this has been demonstrated kind of without a doubt, I would say.